ending story. It has a happy ending. Oh, okay.
Sponsored by Come Get It Records 2012. We support Brian the Hammer Jackson, and so should you.
Hi, this is Sally Kirkland, and I'm on the air with Brian Hammer Jackson, and I do want to have his baby.
Good morning, everybody. This is Brian Hammer Jackson. Right off the bat, I just want to say this. If you're listening to my voice, you've seen a promotion. You can go to actorsbreakdown.com/AEN. That's A as in Apple, E as in Edward, N as in Nancy. actorsbreakdown.com/AEN. You will see the link of our guests. We have a giveaway today. You can go there and look at the giveaway if you want to be part of it and get a chance to win the giveaway, which are Dread Threads. Fantastic. You'll see it. Please go there. Write a comment in there. I'll look. If I call your name, I mention your name on the air, you win. That's it. That's all you have to do. Okay. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. We're global. Hey, how you doing? Good morning, Diane.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good. Good morning, bro.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Sorry, buddy. I'm busy taking care of Miss Daisy.
Oh, I understand. Diane is high maintenance, I'm sure.
Oh, dude, I mean, dude, above and beyond.
Oh, please.
I know. But she's so cute, she deserves it. She deserves it. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. We have a lot to get through. We have a lot to get through today. I'm off the page. And Diane, guess what? My phone's acting up. Guess who may take over the show in a little while?
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
Here's what we're doing today. Oh, she loves it. And she's good. Here's what we're doing today. We have a very special guest. We have two special guests. We have our political scientist, Nick. He's coming in. He's going to talk about something very important. Kelly has it. Kelly is my executive producer. She has it. She has the information. And I think it's about debt. I think that's what Nick is going to talk about. And this is very important. I always love when Nick's on a show because he makes us look intelligent. Also, we have a very, very special guest. She's a comedian, a singer. And also, she wrote for Rodney Dangerfield.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I said. And that's my favorite comedian. She's an actress. She's a singer. She has a sense of humor, and she's hot. Kathy is going to be with us today. And she's going to be our special entertainment guest. Kathy Michelle, Kathy Newman, Kathy Designs. All three of them will be here. Okay.
All three.
I saw her video on Kat. She cracks me up. She is really funny. Nick's coming in about 5 minutes, so I got to get to these stories really quickly, okay? First of all, a lot of you people are wondering, hey, Brian, what do you do when you're not working? And I say, hey, I don't know because I'm always working.
When do you sleep?
I don't. Like I said, it's an old joke. When I do fall asleep, all I'm doing is dreaming that I'm working, and then I wake up and I got to go to work. Wow, tough room. Where's that song, Diane? All by myself. Okay. So, my thought, what were they thinking? Brian, working, sleeping, da 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 da. Oh, so anyway. Anyway, I forgot that.
Yeah, enough about you.
Okay, so here's how I relax, and a lot of people don't know how I relax, except for Diane and a few other girls and Kelly and L.A. Police Department. But other than that, what I do is sometimes I write, and I am writing a couple of stories. Diane doesn't even know about this. Kelly doesn't even know about this. And I just want to share it with you guys. I'm just going to give you the title, see what you think about it. My first one that I've been writing is called The Native American.
Oh, you're going to go off on my family? No,
it's a good thing. Basically, it's a happy story. Basically, it's about the American Indians who are on reservations, and they get into organized crime, and it's called the American Family. How's that? They're wise guys. The American Family, like the mafia and everything? Great story. I'm working on it.
Uh-huh.
the American family. It's like the Gambino family, but they're Native Americans.
They got to get something back, man. All of our land was raped from us.
Thank you. So I'm working on that. It's a great story. I might say so myself. I have written it. And these are about the Native Americans who are on reservations, who get into crime, and they become very successful. They're wise guys, and I call it the American family. The second one I've been writing is called Death Squad. Now, you may know by the other title called Death Squad. This is another movie, Dirty Dozen. Basically, think of the Dirty Dozen, basically. But what this is Dirty Dozen with a twist, 2.0. Death Squad is about these men who are marked for death and death row. And I'm not going to tell you how many there are, because they're not a dozen. And what they do is they go through rigorous. They go through hard training. Rigorous. Thank you. Exactly. They go to really hardcore training to become the most deadly assassins ever been around. And they are assigned to take out certain targets, but there's a twist to it and things like that. And I've been working on that. That's called Death Squad. Huh? What do you guys think of those two? The American Family and Death Squad.
Sounds like a good thing.
Yeah, well, it does. It really does. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And these will be completed when?
When I get some sleep.
Oh,
okay.
So never.
Yeah, exactly. So look forward to year 2020, and it will be number one. No. I have a couple of friends who are writers, and when I was younger and we did independent films and everything, I still got it. I'm still in contact with my writer. And he's been working on it. And the reason I announced it is because it's becoming real. He's going through the rewrites, and my particular instance rewrites called cleaning up my typos and making it sound like it's English.
Oh, man, he's going to be busy.
For a long, long time. And then also, what's on the news today, and let's bring the news music. All right, here we go. And this music is brought to you by The Hammer. Okay, I gotta get professional here. We have a guest, so we have to mind our P's and Q's.
So
let's try it. Thank you, news band. And Kelly wants, Diane, you crack me up. Kelly wants me to remind you again, I know five people were going to leave a comment onto our guest today because they want to win the giveaway, which is the Dread Threads. And if you don't know what a Dread Thread is, all you have to do is go down to actorsbreakdown.com/AEN. There's video of it. There's Kat who's selling it. I mean, I'm telling you, I love it. Get it before the black girls get it, buy it all up.
Oh!
Damn right. I don't want to hear any. Well, you know, I wanted to be polite. I was afraid that, you know, the black people get mad at me and they look at me and then they kill me. None of that.
No, can't have that.
You can't have that. And you know us black people. If I say that, you know, go right now on color people's time, that means an hour from now. So you white people, get in there.
I'm glad you said that.
All by myself. Okay. I don't want to be. So here's what the news is going on today, folks. Here we go. There's a, you know, it's funny how the world turns, and I'll tell you how the world, yeah. First of Kelly
say
saying,
that
oh
again.
My God. Kelly saying, oh my God, what the. Easy, Kelly. It's okay. The black people know I'm black, and the white people excuse it, and they're afraid to call in and mention I'm black. We're safe.
You're black?
I think so. My girlfriend reminds me of it. Anyway, here's the latest news. There's a San Diego mayor. It's a woman mayor in San Diego here, San Diego, California. So apparently she has a gambling problem. She just went through $1 billion.
That was crazy.
Gambled it away.
Video slot machines.
Exactly. $1 billion with a B. Dollars. Where did she get the money? Well, she dipped into her husband, who was dead. Campaign funds, I guess. Wasn't that Diane? He went into his campaign funds, and he did some charity work and everything. She went in there and raided that and went to Vegas and partied.
Well, I think he's also, I don't know if he's the founder or something, had to do with Jack in the Box, too.
Oh, did he really? I got to get that story, really.
Yeah, I heard something about Jack in the Box and her husband.
Well, she gambled away $1 billion. She's been arrested. She's claiming that it was a brain tumor that made her do it.
Right.
So that's what's going on in San Diego. Then in New York, happy New York. Let me celebrate. Let me give New York their props because there's news on New York. You want to hear what they have to do? Let me see. Diane, can you hit the bong, please? Just the bong. I got it. Hello, New York. This is for you. That's right. Mayor Bloomberg just passed a law saying now if you get caught with, I think, just an ounce of marijuana or below, you no longer go to jail. You get a ticket.
Oh, that's the same as California.
Uh-huh. They just passed that law. We're one step closer. Smoke them if you got them. Here's to you, New York, New York. And let me go with L. So congratulations, New York. You're in 2013 is a happy year for you. And let's see what else. Okay, we're going to go with that. Okay, Carnival Cruise. Everybody knows about what's going on with the Carnival Cruise, right? All right, I guess you don't. We'll go with the Carnival Cruise story. Apparently, people were taking a little Carnival Cruise ride. Yeah, Kelly's beeping at me. What's going on, Kelly? Oh, okay. These people went to the Carnival Cruise. They took a little Carnival Cruise ride, a vacation, and apparently, the Carnival Cruise Line off of Mexico, there was a little fire there. So they were stuck there for a while until they had to get somebody to tow them back here. This is just a soundbite of what happened on that fateful cruise. Okay, here we go. All but here we go.
It wasn't a 3-hour tour.
This is on the 5th floor, like heading towards the casino, towards the casino bar. And what happened was I was just up one night just walking around, you know, because it's like Groundhog Day on the ship, the same thing every day. And I went upstairs and I started hearing like I seen water coming down the walls and coming up through the tile and like coming into the carpet, making it real like darkest looking color. And I was like, well, what is that, you know? And like I could start to smell it, and it smelled like I want to say sewage, you know, because I mean that's how you explain it, because it was like, I guess it was leaking, the coolant or something were leaking from the top to the bottom down the ship, and it got really bad, and it went into the elevator, and it started dripping so bad it sounded like it was raining in the elevator, and I was sleeping right below that on the 4th floor in the breezeway because you know the rooms were terribly hot and everything.
We have more video from you, some of the water damage on board the cruise. Tell me how bad this damage has been throughout.
It's been really bad. One lady, I think two ladies, slipped both their hips. And, like, it's, like, really slipping around, like, the dining and eating area because the kitchen is smoking so bad in there that, like, stuff is coming out, the grease and everything. And they're putting down cardboard boxes for us to walk on, and those bad. And now today they tried to clean it up and make it look better because customs and everybody came on board. But, I mean, it's been bad.
Well, there you have it. Sewage coming from that place. It was horrendous. They didn't hardly have any electricity. And let me stop this video. And it got so bad that when people were walking on a carpet, that you could hear it soggy, and it's between your feet, and nothing but urine and piss coming between your feet, and feces coming out of the walls. Okay. That's
I
want to
go on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's really sick. That's your Carnival Cruise. Now, the thing about it is, I hope I have it. The guy did an apology, and it cracked me up, that little weasel. It cracked me up. So now what the Carnival Cruise people said was this. Look, we'll give you $500 and another cruise that was equal to this cruise, and let's call it a day. Now, people who are very sensitive to bacteria and germs, when you got feces and throw up and piss just on the carpet, it's soggy, it's coming through the walls, you can get some serious damage here.
Oh, yeah.
Hepatitis?
Oh, man, yeah. Hepatitis, what is it? A, B, whatever. Pick your letter. Not to mention that, you got old people in wheelchairs, you know, pushing them through there, and then they start leaving their wheelchair tracks in there, and you know, and they don't have much longer to live, so, you know, it's like just Carnival just pissed on them.
Literally.
Literally. So that was a one shitty cruise that people had.
Yep.
Stay tuned for that lawsuit, because I don't know what they're going to do. And so, speaking of lawsuit, I'm going to bring in Mr. Journalist. But speaking of lawsuit, this is a really quick little thing. So you know what's going on. You know what happened with L.A. when we had Dorner. That's a cop killer who was a loose. Well, apparently our mayor offered an award, $1 million. Now that he's been caught, the people who are who put up the award, a lot of them are private companies, are putting real stipulations about this reward that's making it very hard for these people to get it.
Nice.
I mean, so there's, and I'm going to bring journalists in 3 seconds. The funny thing about it, the first guy, well, you know the first people. The first people, they were in there as an older couple. They came in at their cabin. All of a sudden they came upon him. He tied them up. That was a story, yada, yada. She got out of the grip, and she got out of that. She untied herself. She called the cops to alert Dorner, to alert them about Dorner. That started it, right? The second one was very disturbing because it was a gentleman walking in the forest. Now, you wouldn't think that's strange. No problem. He got in his car. Dorner hijacked his car, told him to get out. And it's kind of sketchy what happened. He said there was gunfire hit in the bushes and kind of sketchy. This guy turns out to be a Cub Scout leader who's about 65 years old, wearing his little Cub Scout outfit and his badges, walking in the forest by himself. To me, that was scarier than Dorner. Complete silence.
Wrong.
You're waiting for my body to drop because I'm dying. I know this, but I'm not. I'm going to go forward. At this point, let me talk to Mr. Journalist. But the interesting fact of it is, stay tuned, because now, basically, the city does not want to give out that reward. And then they asked the mayor, hey, Mr. Mayor, who's going to get the reward? Because I think this Cub Scout guy and I think these people, well, then he's double trump. I don't know. We have to look at the legal thing about it. And he goes, well, you're the one who got up the award. Yes, I did. And I have to check. So I'm saying, if they don't get the reward, I'm sure they're going to name the businesses who so-called put up this reward and the reason why they backed out, and they're going to look like shit. they're going to look like shit. All right. Let me get into – I'm off the page right now. Diane, I think Nick's in.
Yeah, Nick and the journalist.
Okay, I'm gonna introduce the journalist, and we're gonna go right to Nick. Nick, welcome to the show. I know you have something very important to talk about, and we're gonna get right to it. Mr. Journalist, I'm off the page. Welcome to the show. You're on Brian the Hammer Jackson Show. Everybody knows you now. Hello, sir.
What's happening, family? Happy Friday.
Oh, now we're family. You see, come in there, you want to kick my ass.
That's what I mean, family. Yes. Yes. That's what I mean. The first thing, the reward is to be paid for information leading to the arrest and conviction of Christopher Dorner. He was never arrested, and he was never convicted. He was executed, which gives the legalese a way out to stiff the Good Samaritan that made the call.
I agree with you. But the public is sick and tired of being scammed, cheated by the government or private business or corporation. It's not going to be good. This is not going to end good at all. They should.
Yeah, the fine print. The fine print. America's built on fine print. Every lottery, you know, you think you're going to get $75 million. It's paid out 20 cents a year for 600 years, you know. So the fine print is part of the hustle. Americans are hustlers, you know that.
Yeah.
So there's a hustle. There's a hustle going on, even with the government, even with the rewards and stuff like that. The people from 9/11 in the Trade Center who got blown up, and the firefighters, they had to fight the government for like 7 years to get paid. So what does that tell you? Hello.
Yeah, well, and then there was some discrepancy with the first responders about not having the right protective gear and the lawsuits and the bronchitis and all the other problems that came around it, and the government didn't tell. Yeah, I'm glad you're here because I got my guy who's going to watch my back against you, Mr. Nick Garoff. This guy will tear you apart.
Oh, I do.
Really?
Nick, how you doing, buddy? Welcome to the show.
Nick.
50 degrees today. I'm loving it.
Do you agree with the journalists regarding the government, how they're screwing the little guy?
He's right when he says it's built on fine print. But I mean, the other thing is too, it's like, you know, if this sort of thing happened, you know, in the days of, like, the frontier days or the old West days, like, you know, if it was a dead or alive warrant, then you get the reward for the buck. If it's not a dead or alive warrant, and he's dead when you bring him in, you get a pat on the back, and you don't get any money. So, I mean, it's nothing new. I mean, this is not the first, like, you know, this is not the first bounty, essentially, to be put out on someone that, you know, no one got to collect on because the guy got killed. Frankly, too, I mean, I think someone getting $1 million for being a part of finding him is really probably, like, one of the most irrelevant and minute parts of the story at this point. You know, I mean, if people want to get upset because they think they're owed $1 million because they contributed to what ended up in that standoff, I mean, you know what, guys, have fun in court. I really don't give a shit. I'm actually more interested to find out exactly, like, what the deal altogether was with, you know, with this renegade cop. You know, he's become, like, a folk hero in a lot of circles, especially, like, on the Internet, because you can trust the Internet to derive every conceivable opinion on every conceivable issue before it's even over.
Yeah, but people on the Internet are morons. But let me ask you this.
I'm an Internet writer, thank you, so okay.
You know, there's always exceptions.
Yes, of course.
But, Nick, let me ask you this. Well, come on, Nick. I read my page, trust me. I mean, not my page. My people are smart. I read other people's pages.
Nice backpedaling there, man.
but let me ask you something. I don't know if it's so much him. Me, my girlfriend and I, we had an argument about this too. And she says she would go to the store and she would hear people talk about this guy, and it infuriates her. Like, this guy's a folk hero, blah blah blah, just what you said. And I said to her, I want you to think about it. It's not so much him. It's so much the hatred. Is it more or less he's a folk hero, or more or less the hatred of the not trusting the LAPD as a corrupt organization who's been getting away with shit for so long that they're willing to overlook what this guy is doing since he exposed some of it out. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I don't know if you follow me or not.
No, I do. I mean, well, the thing, you know, the thing to keep in mind, and, like, this is one of the biggest problems with pretty much any issue of any kind, especially news items, is, you know, people love to draw singular, conclusive opinions about things. Now, like, a lot of, you know, Americans especially, you know, and this is the same thing, you know, we brought it up when we were talking about, you know, guns and such, is, like, Americans really love to romanticize shit. Because it's, well, for one thing, it's a way to process it, especially because, you know, we live in a society, granted it's a violent society, but the average person, you know, they don't see the kind of gun violence, they don't see the kind of corruption, you know, to most people these things are news items. So when they hear about somebody, like, you know, taking any kind of stand against any kind of corrupt institution, there's a sort of an instinct in a lot of folks to, you know, they think they're weighing both sides of it. And, you know, to stand up against, you know, a corrupt police force like the LAPD, that's admirable. To kill a bunch of people while you do it, that's not. So, you know, to say he's a hero because he, you know, for the stand he took, the cause may be just, but the means by which he went about, you know, raising this attention, going on a killing spree, is never acceptable.
Well, hold on. I agree with you.
Can I get in here?
Let me just say, I agree with you, Nick. I agree with it was deplorable what he did. He cowered what he did. Nobody goes after children, innocent children. So I understand that. What I'm trying to say is I don't think so much as they're putting him, I think majority of the people think he's a coward and was disgraceful, including me. I'm saying that since he blew a little bit of whistle of the LAPD, you already know conspiracy theorists. It could be a conspiracy theorist in anything. You pay a cable bill. Well, you know, the government's looking on your TV and watching you pay that bill, you know. But I'm just saying, I think they're taking the approach as this, to say, yeah, the guy's a scumbag. But LAPD is even worse. So is it the worst of the two evils? Because remember who he was targeting. One second, I'm going to bring up an alarm here. He was targeting police officers. Now, if you saw the way the police officers acted, they acted like a militia and a vigilante group.
They sure did.
One of their own fell. They didn't go by the law. They didn't do protocol here. And this is what he was trying to say in his manifest about the mentality of how they are, including the racism, including the corruption and things like this. And so it's hard for – and you're going to get this in a minority community. I understand it. They're not saying he's a hero, but they understand. I mean, who did the thing was a joke. Good comedian, help me out here. Come on. Not Eddie Murphy, but come on, the other one. Chris Rock said it. Chris Rock did a thing on O.J. Simpson when it first happened. Chris Rock was telling about how Nicole used to go to the clubs and screw every guy, which we'll talk later. And Chris Rock says, you know, she was still living in O.J.'s house. She was still getting his money. I mean, she went out and she was partying, putting it in the face. There were things going on, and she's coking this. He goes, I don't condone the killing, but I understand.
Yeah, I remember that.
So I think this goes with this. They don't condone what he did. It's a cowardly thing, but he understands. Is this what we're dealing with here, Nick?
Well, yeah, in a sense. I mean, the thing is that, and this is like something I think, you know, and there's another problem that the general public really has, is the depth to which they can read into an issue. You know, right now, I mean, you know, taking him, for one thing, it's, you know, it's easy to say he snapped and went on a killing spree like that, but the truth is that he probably did literally just completely lose his mind. He probably had a psychotic breakdown, which caused
right.
it, which is really the only way this happens. And what
right.
that speaks to, in addition to, like, the LAPD's, you know, just sort of, you know, militia mentality and their, you know, corruption and their, you know, their brutalization of people. You know, this is, I mean, it's not exclusive to L.A. L.A.'s had it for a long time because L.A.'s, you know, had a war zone in terms of criminal justice.
Mm-hmm.
But the way people have thought about policing, largely, you know, and it stems from post-9/11 stuff, people love to worship armed people in uniform. And a lot of people, to a lot of people, it sounds like a really good idea. We've got a lot of combat vets coming out of these places. They're, you know, they're fit and they're disciplined, and they spend all this time serving their country, and it's good to employ them. Let's put them on the police force. But what they're forgetting is that a lot of these guys are coming back with serious traumatic brain injuries, PTSD, all manner of, like, you know, psychological problems. And not only that, but their policing experience has pretty much been exclusively of a military nature, which is overseas,
right,
dealing with people who don't have constitutional rights. There is, you know, limited to no due process of any kind. And because of that, you've got, I mean, shit, you know, most people can notice it just when they get pulled over. It's less of like, oh, well, I saw you were speeding, so I might just slow down. It's, I'm going to enforce this code, and I'm going to buck you in the ass with my, you know, with my radar gun here. And I'm going to just get this collar, you know, then you take the same thing. It's like, you know, marijuana. It's becoming more and more acceptable throughout the country for people to smoke. It's being legalized in states. You still have these hard-charging cops who are all about going out and getting the bus, getting the collar. It's, you know, it's less about civil domestic policing, and it's becoming more militarized, which is, you know, it's been building since the day of the Pinkertons, but now it's here. And now because of this, you've got, you know, you've got military personnel who are trained to kill, who are trained, you know, in combat, and they're being thrown into these, you know, civil situations that they're largely ill-prepared for in many senses.
Okay,
and it's
so
really
bottom line, you're saying we got killers who are going into putting in an application in a police department, and that's the kind of attitude we need, so let's go police the streets and protect the innocent people.
Take out the trash, right?
Yeah, exactly. You get, you know, everyone likes to think about Dirty Harry, and a lot of people think too. You know, they think criminal, and they don't differentiate between the different levels and variations of crime and what's going on. You know, they think every time a cop's out there busting someone, he's a rapist or a murderer, and that he should just, you know, get shot up or whatever.
Okay.
When he's usually just
more
somebody
military.
Trying to cross the street. I mean, most of the busts are really mundane. Have you ever been pulled over by the cops and said, why aren't you stopping real crime? Why are you busting me for making a left-hand turn? You ever did that? Like, why are you harassing me? Probably there's a huge percentage of the work. Of course, there's some important police work that goes on, but we all know there's a difference between petty crime and true crime. And
well,
the
there's
true
a difference
crime
between
never gets touched.
Journalists, there's a difference between law and the letter of the law. Now, they follow the letter of the law, they would have to bust you for making an illegal turn. That's the letter of the law. It's up to them to decide whether they want to pursue the letter of the law or the law. Do you know what I mean?
That's a good point. Yeah, that is a good point.
On that note, Nick, how long do I I have you? Because I want to talk...
I'm wide open, so don't worry about it.
Okay, because Kathy is here. She's our guest, and I know she's on a quick schedule. Journalist, how long do I have you?
Well, you've got me for another, I guess, 20, 30. I can hang for most of the show, but I do want to say one word. Can I say one word?
Yeah, go ahead.
Nat Turner. No, Nat Turner, the slave rebellion in Virginia. He killed 35 plantation people. The entire state of Virginia, the militia came down on him. He was a crazy person who was deranged, who led a slave rebellion. He was Christopher Dorner of his day. But in retrospect, he's a freedom fighter, isn't he?
What was he fighting for? What was he fighting for? What was his cause? You would have to have a cause
a
to become a freedom fighter.
Were you missing that? It was a slave rebellion?
But it's so vague. I understand. It's like, was he trying to lead slaves to the freedom train, or was he trying to, you know, but what was his cause? Huh?
He was doing a Christopher Dorner.
He was doing a Spartacus.
Okay, I'll take Spartacus.
Okay.
I will take Spartacus, yes.
Okay,
I'm
with you. Go ahead.
But at the time, he was Christopher Dorner.
Okay.
He was the worst person in the world. There were all points bulletins out, $1 million reward, the whole deal. But through the prism of time, we see that his actions were noble. And will that be the fate of Christopher Dorner?
No, never. And I hope it never does. Because what he did, if he would have went through the channels, even as far as maybe getting a book deal to expose it or write a book or whatever, yeah, he cannot wipe the blood off your hands and say, hey, he's not such a bad guy. He killed innocent kids who weren't even part of his case. I know that you can excuse, I can't even say that. You could say, okay, he went after his lawyer. A lot of divorce people would love to do that. He went after the lawyer's children. And he vowed to kill their wives, their children, their families. You cannot put him in that level. That's my opinion. Either all of us got, hello?
Still here.
Oh, okay, you're still here.
Yeah, we're here.
Okay, well, what do you think about that, journalist? I know the question. I just jumped in on. What do you think?
I just think through time, I think that, of course, Dorner's a lunatic. I'm not standing up for Dorner.
Right.
But what I am saying is that through the prism of time, we may get to see that there's a fine line between terrorism and freedom fighting.
Oh.
There's a very fine line.
There's a fine line between being a coward and going after
the Irish.
But I'm going to save you, journalist. I know where you're going. I know what his thought was about. His thought was to expose this. I stand up for right. I stand up for corruption. Fine. I can say that to Kathy. She's on right now. I'm a nice human being. I think I love you because of your mind, but I want to get into her panties. But what he did was unspeakable. I would be embarrassed. I'm going to say this to you. I'm a black guy. I would be embarrassed that anybody put up O.J. Simpson or this guy as some kind of freedom fighter for the black community or for any kind of stand.
Wouldn't
you?
O.J.'s not no freedom fighter.
But
neither was Dorner, really, because if they would have killed him,
In time, you're gonna say his actions were justified?
No, what he's saying is that in time, in retrospect, people are going, like, and he's not even talking, like, you know, immediate future. He's talking way, you know, further down the road, maybe like a generation or two, when it's a matter of history.
I hope not. Could you see that, Chris? Could you see that, Nick? I hope not. I hope not. And I'm afraid that would be.
Keep this in mind when you're thinking about that, though, is that, you know, I mean, you know, throughout history, you know, like, killers have been romanticized in a lot of ways. I mean, hell, we've got movies based on Billy the Kid where you're sympathetic to him. But the thing about that is also that, you know, in those days, you know, news was delivered via handbill. You know, the story of Billy the Kid evolved over a long period of time. Now, because of the nature of the society and the news cycle we have today, all the coverage and all the discussions and even the archive discussion we're having now, not that that's probably going to go into, you know, the record to Congress or anything, but the point is that, you know, if anyone wants to actually look back and see what happened and anyone actually takes interest in the story of Christopher Dorner long after it's over,
right.
You know, they're going to have what's circulating now. And it's not just going to be a matter of, you know, it's not just going to be a matter of, like, oh, he was, you know, fighting corrupt cops. People are going to know specifically what happened because of the way we report things today.
And I agree with that. On that note, I'm going to have to, my guest, if you guys could hang tight, she's also from California, Los Angeles, and she's a comedian. She can shed some light on this. Let me tell you about this lady. She is fabulous, and I don't use the word fabulous a lot, but she is. I'm going to call her Kathy Newman, aka Kat Z, aka Kathy Michelle. She has and Newman Designs. Kathy is one woman show called, she's going to have to tell me because I'll, barbiturate, Elleville Barbiturate, she'll say it. She's a comedian of rock opera featuring Black Young. She's also a comedy writer, and her clients include, now check this out. Her clients include the late Rodney Dangerfield, my all-time favorite guy. Rodney Dangerfield. Kathy wrote for him for 7 years. She's also a pinup. She is a hot lady. She's a pinup girl for Cougar Women. Kathy has been named Inquirer Magazine as the most innovative design artist 7 times. Kathy will give away, she's giving away her calendar pinups for Cougar Pinup and her hair product called Dread Threads. If you go to actressbreakdown.com/AEN, you will see Kathy on there. We featured her. And you will see in the giveaway section her her Dread Threads. If you make a comment during the show, I will look at it, and you get a chance to win it. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Kathy Newman. Hello, Kathy. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. How
good morning to you, and thank you for being so patient.
Oh, no problem. What's up?
Oh, well, you're in California. We were just talking about, you know, what was going on in the last month with this guy. But we'll talk about that later. Let's talk about
all
you
right,
first. And if we have time, we'll talk about him. So, Kathy,
okay.
I'm going to play a clip of what I have of you. First of all, you crack me up.
Okay.
And let me
blue
see the
comedy,
clip.
Comedy, of course.
Yeah. While I find the clip, can you tell us a little bit about your show? You have a one-woman show going on right now?
Yes, I have a show called Ellaville Barbiturate Comedy Rock Opera, and, you know, featuring Black Lungs. We were thinking of changing the name to Blackouts, but too many people know it's a Black Lung. I don't know, it's a last-minute name. I ended up, what it is, it's a highly interactive show where I'm a stand-up comic, and I get, you know, I used to be a rock star. The story's based like that. I get hit by an Oscar Mayer Wienermobile. I'm a runaway bride. And that's how I got hit. I went into a coma 30 years, come back as a rock star. And I do a rock and roll comedy timeline from the 60s to the 80s. And then the audience is my band. I choose 4 people for each decade. It is sort of a Spinal Tap versus all these crazy rock movies, and it's 2013, but I think it's 1985, and I think I'm 21, but I'm 54. And so I sing everything, and there's a lot of obstacles being a rock star in that stage at that point. So I stuff a kielbasa sausage down a guy's pants in the 80s, make it sick if I get sick. I sing Lemmy's song. I change it like Dr. Demento. Instead of killed by death, it's killed by dick. Who's the mate for talking? Shit like that. You know, it's all very funny. I get to sing. I get to do comedy. And I enjoy, and that's what I enjoy. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, it sounds great. Let me play a little clip.
All right.
Do you go by Kat or do you go by Kathy?
I have so many goddamn names, I'll tell you. I'm going by, I go by Kat Newman, Kathy Michelle, whatever gets me more accounts on Facebook.
Okay. Well, here's Kat playing One-Eyed Snake song.
And, oh, my God.
Do you want to set this up, Kat, before I play
it? Well, this song is actually a song, I mean, that I wrote it as a rap song for my husband after 22 years of marriage as a later letter. I left it for him, and I told him I'd produce it. And that's what it was. It was my letter to say goodbye to him. And so I made it a song.
Did he pass away, Kat?
No, he didn't. He cheated on me with some younger girl. Looked like a, you know, I don't even want to talk about her.
Yeah.
But, you know,
he
was a movie director. He's a movie director, Oscar award-winning movie director.
Yeah, so it would be better if he did pass away.
Yeah, it's a lot easier when someone dies than getting a divorce, you know. It's good to know that they don't have the benefits of getting laid by a younger girl on your cash.
Exactly.
That's right. You're right.
Everybody, One-Eyed Snake by
Thanks.
Kat. You're welcome.
Thanks.
Here we go.
Oh.
Well,
there you go. Is it up?
You know, usually I could time this pretty good. And it seemed to be buffering, but I will play it. How did you come to this while I play it? How did you come to this song? What's your inspiration for this One-Eyed Snake song?
It's about men and their third leg, how it dictates the mind and the penis rather than the decisions made in the heart. the guy could, you know, make all his decisions on the penis, and when the world blows up, I'm sure it'll be a guy with a big heart on.
You're not bitter, though.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what I mean? I actually wrote it for Rapping Rodney. I could rap it right now without the music, too.
Oh, really? Let's hear it.
All right. Sorry I hurt you, but you took me for a fool. You stepped on my heart, and it wasn't too cool. Couldn't be honest. You couldn't be real. Stole my heart for some pussy meal. You think she loves you because she calls you honey? All she wants is all your money. Think she's hot because she spreads her knees? How about the wife that begged you, please? I cried, you couldn't care. You're already in her underwear. She teased your snake, you came for more. She faked the cotton pony and you couldn't score. You lied, you're just a fake. You'll love to go off with the one-eyed snake. Then it goes into a chorus, but that's pretty much what it is.
Wow.
Yeah. Not bad for a blues singer. Okay.
You know what? You sound so hot to me right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you do.
Got a hard-on, too?
No, baby, not yet.
I love those morning hard-ons when they're poking
my
back.
You know what? You're going to have to work for my hard-on.
Not in the morning, I'm sure you've got one. They're used for kickstands so you don't roll out of bed.
Let me see this. I think I got it queued up.
I got to tell you, I've been morning wood myself, but I'm having a hard time with the whole thing because for some reason I'm seeing Rodney Dangerfield in a bikini, and it's just throwing my whole mental off. I'm sorry.
When you look at me, it's hard to believe that I wrote for the guy. It really is. I mean, I am. I'm actually writing for him now, and he's dead. I don't know if anybody knows this, but when he died, he really took comedy to the grave. Because on his tombstone, it says, "There goes the neighborhood."
I want to talk to you about that too, because I used to see Rodney, and this is towards the end of his career. It was sad. There was a little town that, in case you guys don't, we get a lot of people from New York. We have this town or city called Century City.
Correct. I know where that is.
Yeah, Century City is kind of a corporate business district. Would you agree, Kat? And Rodney Dangerfield used to walk around in his robe.
Always. I have a picture of him with that. Always.
Yeah, but he used to, towards the end, he used to talk to himself a lot, walking around in his robe.
Maybe his antidepressants were having side effects.
It could be.
He was a very depressed man. Actually, what you saw Rodney on stage was not the Rodney off the stage.
Right.
You know, he was a very interesting person, but it wasn't, he had an act. Now, there's people like myself and Stanley Myron Handelman was my coach, and he passed away. They're all Borschtbelt comics. And he was a funny guy off stage. He could take it on stage and not know the difference. Rodney changed when he was off stage. He was worried about bombing even till the day he died. And I wrote him stuff for the Leno show. I candy coated for him. He liked a shotgun delivery, set up punchline, and that was it, so he could move on in case he bombed. If he did bomb, he locked himself in the bathroom. He worked the Hollywood Theater at the MGM, and he did some blues humor there, and it didn't go over too well. But Rodney always walked around in that robe, and I have a picture of him. I shot it for him, holding some handbags I made for him. And he was in an Easy Money bathrobe, had cards all over it, and he had his whole ass hanging out. He used to have blood all over his robe.
That's how he used to walk around in Century City. His ass was hanging out and everything.
He never gave a shit, he told me. He didn't give a shit. He was on prescription marijuana. He's one of the first patients on that shit. And he had a very severe case of depression.
Yeah.
You know, he said he would have been dead if he didn't take these pills. But you know what? His favorite show was the Jerry Springer show. He cleared the whole place out where he lived, and nobody could bother him during Jerry Springer. He loved that show. He liked trailer trash humor.
Oh, man.
He was a very eccentric guy, and it was very difficult, but he's done me a lot of favors and started off a lot of young comics, you know, in the town.
He did, yeah, and you're right. Would you say he was suicidal? And this is the last time we'll talk about Rodney because it's about you. But
I think suicidal. I think all comics are suicidal, including myself. I think we're all off. I think we have bad, you know, dysfunctional, like, you know, growing up, we use comedy as a therapy to serve us, our sanity. And people only laugh if you notice some bad things. They never laugh about good things. It never goes over, or else you're a corny comic. They want to hear all the bullshit, things that people are afraid to admit. And Rodney was very depressed. Yeah, I think he was suicidal. I believe he was.
You
read his book. He has a book he put out. And his plan was, right before he died, was to take a RV across the United States and interview a bunch of people. I don't believe he'd make the trip. He was really ailing in his last few years, you know, of heart problems and everything else. He died of basically, he was slipped into a coma at UCLA and never seen him since.
Did his wife eventually leave? I think his wife did eventually leave him, didn't she? Or did she die?
Joan Dangerfield was a piece of work. She was a trophy wife, beautiful woman in her 50s. I mean, my God, Rodney knew it. He knew it. She liked the lifestyle, the money, the way, you know, and he knew it. He knew it. He was married 28 years. After he passed away, they sold a condo. I think they got like $9 million for it on Wilshire Boulevard. He owned a house. She tried to sue, I believe, his kids for the jokes that he wrote.
Oh, no.
And then she found now she hooked up with a multi-billionaire, and she just loves money. Needless Markups, Neiman Markups was her favorite store. She was always good to me. I really can't badmouth her because she was always good to me. But what they claim, when Rodney died, he really didn't get any respect because of the situation with her. And she's beautiful. If you look her up, her name was Joan Childs, and she met through what was the lady from the Alice Cramden? What was the June Meadows? She met through June Meadows, and she set her up with Rodney. That's how she met him. And she had a flower store on Malibu called Jungle Roses, and she always went for very wealthy guys. And said she lives for the money. She loves it, but she's a very sweet person. I have to say to me. But I hear other things from other people, but, you know, what can I say?
What can you say? You're absolutely right. I think I have another clip, and we're going to go to the other. Let me see what I have here.
What's your name?
My name is Kathy Z.
Now, that's you, right?
Yeah, that's me. I went by Kat Z because some centerfold told me to change my name. It sounds better. I said it really mixed things up with everything. I want to use one name, but go ahead. That's it.
And that's basically, this is a promo, and she's doing a promo. This is live. It's cute, but you'll get a feel about your personality. Is that fair, Kat, to
say
the promo?
Sure, sure. Yeah, I'd like to get an idea of my personality myself.
Yeah, I'm falling in love with you, you know that.
I'm my own worst enemy. Go for it.
I
can't even enjoy being alone.
What's your name?
Wait a minute, hold on.
Yeah,
Kat Z. Okay.
Kat? Yeah.
Did you say can't enjoy being a woman?
No, I said no. Well, that's another joke. I said, here's a joke I wrote. I even gave it to Rodney. I said, you know, I have a lot of trouble being around people, and I went to a therapist. He says I'm my own worst enemy. Now I can't even enjoy being alone.
That does sound like a Rodney joke.
That is a Rodney joke.
I love it.
There you go.
All right. Let's get a little bit about your personality. You are disturbed, and I find it very sexy.
Thank you. I like to be twisted, and I like people that appreciate that.
You're a twisted sister. Look at you.
Thank God I don't look like Dee Schneider. I mean, then I'd run to the nearest bridge. I mean, that's a tranny in disguise. Come on.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
No.
Wow. He's an ugly, I don't mind trannies, but this guy is just brutal. Here we go. A little bit about Kat, Inside Studio. Oh. Here we go.
All right.
What's your name?
My name is Kathy Z, or Kat Z. I just changed it this minute. Kat Z, okay? Just call me Kat Z. All right, that's my porn name.
Okay.
When I do porn, it's Kat Z. When I wear dress leather, they're Kat Z. When I'm doing music, it's Kat D. Michelle. What do you want? Kat Newman Design. Whatever you want. You call me whatever. I don't care what you call me. It's all eat it up any way you want it. I'll chew you up and spit you out now. Just get these Dread Threads rocket. Check it out. Cat Z. Dread Threads. Facebook. Facebook. Dread Threads. Rocket. Fuckers.
Yeah, I love it. That's it, man. Fuck it. That was good. That's good. That's the way to go. That's how I roll. That's how I roll. That's it. You're gonna get better than that. What's that? Right? Isn't that the way it goes? That's the way it goes. That's it, right? That's funny. You gotta be funny. You gotta be chill. Don't say strange shit. That's what I'll say. Then let me go.
You are too funny.
Yeah, I make Buddy Rich look mellow on the bus when everybody had a nervous breakdown. Remember that one?
Yeah.
Buddy Rich breakdown on the bus. That's so funny.
You are too funny. Now, let me say, you are a singer also. You're a songwriter. I'm imagining.
Sure, I'm straight across everything. I do everything well. And you know what? I want to get my own talk show. I'm getting ready to do it because I got to bring vaudeville back when the host could sing. Remember that? Like Dean Martin, they could sing, they could dance, they could do it all. Now you don't have that.
Well, you know why? You know why you don't have it all? It's because there's too many people, there's too many channels. Back in the day, there was four channels, Kat, and you could have the time to get into it and get to know the artist. Nowadays, you got 30 seconds. Entertain me or I'm out of there.
You're right.
You know,
right.
So everything has to be spot on, bam, in your face, catch my attention, or you're going to lose me.
Exactly. If you're not funny in 2 seconds, you're off at the comedy.
Exactly.
Two
exactly.
Seconds, you're done. And I know how to start my things. Like in my play, my first line is this. You know, I go, who the hell are you looking at? I'm Elleville Barbiturate. Blow me.
Ouch.
That's how you open up.
See, you would have had me. You would have had me.
That's it. That's how you started. I get right in it.
Well, Kat, let me tell you something.
That makes nice plays look good.
So what would you like to promote right now, Kat? Because are you going on tour? You have an album or a CD that they can get?
Yeah, I do have an album that's out. It's always been out. People have been ripping it off download. That's another thing about, you know, the town.
Yeah.
You can't make money. It's free downloads. It's called I'm Not Here for the Taking. It's a radio interview where I cursed the actual host out for about an hour. I gave him shit, and he almost had to put his head in a gas oven. It's called I'm Not Here for the Taking. It's available worldwide. Go on catsmetalarmy.com. You'll hear it for free because that's the way people roll here. They steal your money. And also, I plan on taking Black Lung, you know, Elville Barbiturate comedy rock opera, all over the place, and starting in the next 3 months. I've been going on. I fired the band and made the audience my band now.
Well, do you have a, I don't want to call it a tour, but it is a tour. Do you have a tour date in the first place you're going to play?
No, we haven't set that up. No, I'm still not done with my backing track.
Okay.
I keep changing them. Yeah, we're using backing tracks because the audience is the band. So how the hell are you going to, you know, so we have to have something for them to, you know.
Right, right.
So we're starting about three months to get back there and finish these backing tracks. So I did fire the actual band. There was a band. But they
really? How come you fired them?
Not funny. The music doesn't hold up the comedy. The comedy holds up the music. I told one of the guys in the band to wear a diaper and sing my bone apes, all right, and make my taco frown. So the guy, he puts on a diaper, and he says, oh, I can't do this. What will people think of me? I said, you're a comic. You got to undress your mind. You can't think of what people think of you. What, are you nuts? He didn't want to do it. So I said, look, you dragged me into this. I said, you're fired. The next guy wasn't funny. They stalled when they wanted to put guitar leads. I go, what's the reason? So I decided, you know what? If you're going to do something like Spinal Tap, why don't you get the audience to get up there and do it? And they'll look like a deer in the headlights. Then I have something to work with now.
Are you from New York, Kat? I'm hearing some New York or Jersey in there.
Of course I am. Yeah, I lived here most, you know, half of my life, I could say. I'm from Brooklyn.
You're from Brooklyn? Wow.
Brooklyn. Where all the comics are from. All of us.
That's true.
Right? We're all from there.
Well, you know what I'm going to do? Here's what we do. Kat, we're going to open. We have some callers here. We're going to open up the phones, and we're going to have our guests and sometimes our celebrity guests who come on the show, if they'd like to ask you a question, Sure. Let's go with Mr. Nick. Nick, do you have a question for Kat?
Actually, I don't know. I'm just kind of dumbfounded, and I was, like, seeing some sparkly keys, so my ADD set in. I guess he didn't get me in that 2 minutes. I do have a good question. You mentioned downloads and how they're kind of, like, killing your ability to make money. Now, have you been able to have any success with, you know, actually selling your own, you know, your own bits and, you know, tapes, whatever you might be selling, like, online through your own website, or are you finding, like, it's getting pirated left and right?
Well, this is with everything, Napster, everybody. You know, everybody's free downloading everything now. Everybody, the porn business gone down because they just, you know, download porn. Everything's downloaded. So the only way I can make money off of this is have a show, sell it for merch, or just make a bunch of these CDs, you know, take them around. No, I'd love to hear it. Just sell it right there on Impulse Buy. If you're funny, they go, I go, here, you have a CD. You got to buy it, though. Yeah, but today it's just the whole business is dried up, you know, with everybody. It's put everything. I mean, we're all hurting, all the entertainers.
Everyone is. But have you ever thought about booking?
Fine.
Now, I know there's a couple. Now, you're in L.A. now, right?
Right.
Okay. There's a what's his name has a club in Burbank. You know who I'm talking about. Levitz, John Levitz.
Yeah. I never went to his club yet. Never went there.
And then you got, of course, you got the Laugh Factory, and you got the Comedy Store. Have you been to those places?
I worked the Comedy Store 21 years back in the day. I worked with everyone. That was when comedy was hot, when it was in the 80s. That's when it reached the hottest point ever. It was in the 80s. The comedy, you know, that was the whole thing. Star Search was on. They had Mitzi Shore running it. Dice Clay was there. We had Robert. Well, you know what was going on. I worked the Ice House. I worked with Jamie Masada at the Laugh Factory. I worked the main clubs with some of the best comics in the world, legendary comics. And what happened, you know, people would go there to try to get sitcoms when there were sitcoms. There isn't any, hardly. There's all these reality shows now. And I just went out for one myself. I just auditioned. They hit me up, Extreme Cougar Wives. Oh, my God. I mean, I don't know how much reality is really reality on these shows either. And it really doesn't take any talent. It really doesn't.
Yeah, could I ask you, let me ask you another question, though. I mean, have you ever worked with or been, like, you know, part of any of the troops out there, like the Groundlings or, what's it called? I want to say the Sunday Circle, but I know that's not right.
It's like there's Second City and all that.
Yeah, Second City, Upright Citizens. Have you ever belonged to any of those troops?
No, I was a member of this. Stanley Myron Handelman, he had a group of people. He was a Dean Martin show regular, and he was a Borstal comic, one of the best storytellers in the world, trained me up to be a comic, and I ended up on a thing called the Flying Handelman, the best of the comic for tour with him. But after that, I ended up with the USO show. I auditioned for the USO, and Bob Hope was around, and that's what I did. And then I continued working for free. Everybody was working for free at these comedy places. They give you tickets, you sell them, it's pay to play, and you have to pay for the audience. Right now, the offers I get are in Vegas. And I'm going to take my show probably into Vegas because I need the right stage, it's got to be interactive, and I need a lot of props. This is a rock opera now. We're dealing with instruments and comedy.
And that's expensive, too.
That's expensive.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
All right, what kind of weed did Rodney Dangerfield smoke, and can I get some?
Oh, God. Well, you know, I don't believe he might have left a lot over. I mean, the guy had no weed. He used to light it up during his premieres. I usually see him used to smoke a joint. We'd be watching, you know, his premiere at a show, filled up with all these celebrities and people in the business, and he'd be walking around the bathroom smoking the shit in the middle of the movie. So I joined in with him, and Joan used to go, oh, my God, put this out. This is terrible. What are you guys doing? He says, I'm smoking a joint. What does it look like? Rodney turned me on to the first prescription pot ever, you know, when you could get a prescription, and he was the first one, of course, to get it. I had a kid at the time in school. He gives me a hit of this joint. I swear to God, I was on the 21st floor of his penthouse at Wilshire. I looked out. I wanted to fall out. I was tripping in my mind. I started laying on the floor. I couldn't even pick my kid up. I was so out of it on this shit. He's the one that
to the innovator. That, and I got to tell you, you know, there's plenty of that weed out there now. Look at the laws. You could get it legal in states here. You could always.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be legal, Kat.
It's legal.
It's basically legal now, I'll tell you the truth. They're just figuring out a way to tax it. That's all.
Right. I mean, all the big cigarette companies bought the names up for these things years ago and knew this was going to happen.
Let me ask you a personal question, Kat. Do you find it hard, as the older you get at age, you're 54, 50?
Correct, yeah.
Okay. Do you find it harder for a woman? Now, you are a pretty lady. I don't care, 54, whatever. She's hot. She is a very pretty lady. But do you find it in your mind that there is a expiration date for models and female comics?
Well, actually, I'm getting more work now than I did when I was younger. I think I grew into my looks. I think it's strange because of the cougar concept.
Are you lesbian?
Everybody asks at me that because they're all the female comics are.
That's right. The female comics, you got to get a butch haircut and turn into Paula Poundstone, Rosie, Ellen.
Elaine Boozler is gay.
Yeah.
They're all gay. I'm not gay. I actually the opposite. I tend to take after Mae West.
Oh, yeah?
I like Mae West. She's like a cougar. She was good. And I feel the older you get, there's no expiration date in comedy. There isn't. There isn't. In music, there is.
Yeah.
Not comedy. If they want to watch a woman rap and she's 75, that's even better. Funny.
Didn't Diller die? Wasn't she still doing shows until, like, she got sick?
Who? Which one?
Phyllis Diller.
Oh, Phyllis Diller.
Yeah. She did comedy.
Lily Tomlin.
Did it great.
Everybody's still doing it. There's no expiration date in comedy at all. You got to live the blues to sing the blues, just like that.
Unless your act starts to suck.
Yeah, if you're a comedian, you could take it to the grave.
Yeah, what's the difference between an East Coast audience and West Coast audience?
East Coast are tougher. East Coast are tougher. They like street humor. They're street people. They're different. They're tougher audience. They're tough on everything. But you know what? They got the kindest heart. But that's my hometown, so when they see me, they like it. But if you come to the West Coast, it's a different kind of humor here. It's a different humor. You're in a different place. This place is spread out. You don't have the kind of city center New York has. You can't talk about the same kind of neighborhoods. The food, it's different. So every time you tour and you do a different club, you got to understand they have their own regional humor, and they relate to it. Comedians out here that do L.A., it's a different ball game. You got a lot of the entertainers that show up to these shows. You know, people are entertainers, and everybody's out here trying to get a gig. And your audience is made up of entertainers, too. It's a little bit different.
Do you have an agent at this point, Kat? It seems like you'd be very difficult to work with.
No, I'm not difficult to work with. I'm easygoing. If you're going to pay me, I'm easygoing. You don't pay me, I'm not easygoing. That makes sense.
Well, let me clarify that just in case. Wait a minute. Let me clear it. What I mean by that is I misspoke. I didn't say you're difficult to work with. It seemed like you would be like a diva because of a perfectionist.
I don't know. You know, I'm ready right now for a talk show. That's my goal. That's it. I don't have
Do you have an agent?
No, I actually took a will call on my agent. I was a privileged talent agent. They were sending me out for Centrum Silver. Dye my hair. They wanted me to let my hair go gray at the age, and that was years ago. They cast people, these agents, according, you know, you're a mother by the age of 15 on these commercials.
Yeah, I know that agency well. I know them very well.
Privilege? Yeah. Privilege. I took a will call, and I said, look, if you're going to make me go out on Centrum Silver and I got to have my hair gray, I'd rather die. Let me die. No pun intended. I dyed my hair black. I went out and I just said, look, I'm taking it in my own hands. I know enough people in this town to get work. It's who you know. That's all there is to it. There's no question about it.
Wow.
Sometimes agents are great and sometimes they could be bad. I went through millions of agents
I don't know if I want to go back to a bunch of second calls on another commercial and have the same bunch of people on a call back as I went on the first time. It's just you got to know someone. You know, my husband, I was married for 22 years, was a movie director and commercial director. So I've been on the locations. I've seen him take a gaffer and say, hey, say a couple lines. But he's there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the business is who you know.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously. And you got to have the talent and who you know. But not everybody's always so talented. But it's who you know in L.A. You can't. It's very difficult. Believe me, it's a hard nut to crack out here in the entertainment industry, even if you're young. Even if you're young, just plan on having a day job, and that's even hard to get. Harder than to get a man. I'm on the market to find a good man. Good luck. Good
well,
luck. Every single one wants to get laid. I see they're all young. They want to get laid by me. I'd rather charge already. Make it a business. I'm going to hook up with someone. Why the hell am I going to get laid? For what?
Well, let me ask you a question. Who was your inspiration? Let me guess. I would say I'm going to get the standard answer. Lucille Ball?
No, Pat Cooper. Red Fox.
Pat Cooper?
Yeah, Pat Cooper teasing.
What?
He is funny. Teasing, you know. Red Fox.
Really?
Sam Kennison was funny. Sam Kennison, Red Fox. It was actually males that were my inspiration. Talented people were like Tracy Ullman.
Mm-hmm.
Tracy Ullman, she was very funny. But, you know, I don't know what the hell is going on with her. Gilda Radner is dead. But I still like Mae West.
Yeah.
She was the first, right? Mae West. She left you the cougar.
Yeah, but she also had comic timing way back then. I mean, her timing was quick.
Wasn't it?
Without training, she just had that natural, subliminal comedian just right on it quick.
That's damn right. She's my inspiration. Be Mae West. That's who I am.
Very good. Very good.
That's
I'm going to open up the mic right now. Jeff, Diane, do you have a question for Kat?
No, I'm just enjoying listening to her speak.
Yeah, she is something, isn't she?
No, but I do want to know about, I don't mean to step on anybody's toes, but the Dread Threads.
Yeah, tell us
cool.
About how you... Thank you, Diane.
I've been a conceptual artist for years, and I had to make these things for hair. They work six ways. I was styling rock bands, including my own. And so I wanted... You remember when Steven Tyler was walking out feathers, everybody
yeah.
was walking out this? And I said, it's getting old. Let's do something different. So I started making these bands, and you can make them... You wrap them around your head. You wear it as a band. They hang down all different lengths, and they extend your hair length. Also, you could wear it in your ponytail, braid it in, wear it in your belt loop, wear it around your neck. It works so many ways. It changes, makes your hair colorful, and nobody says that hair has to be hair to make it longer. Why not put different eco-friendly material, make it look cool? I wear them, and, when I sell them right off of me, they say, where'd you get that? I want one. So now I'm making a whole new line of ones that are a little higher class with a charm on it and selling those. And I'm working at the flea market at the Topanga Vintage Market, and it's always the fourth Sunday of every month, so it's coming up to me on November 20th, what is it, February? It's February, yes, I think at the end of February. So I'll be over there at the Topanga Vintage Market the fourth Sunday this month in front of AMC Theater in Woodland Hills and Topanga Canyon, and I'll be selling all rock and roll memorabilia, including the Beatles' Hard Day's Night that's signed, and all rock and roll stuff, including Dread Threads. I actually put them on you there. You walk away and you feel like a whole different person. You're just rocking it when you wear it. I'll tell you what it is. Wait. February 24th.
February 24th.
From 8 to 3 p.m.
And right now, we're on at the most ungodly hour, Kat, but I'm
no
telling
kidding.
You, Art, this is the kind of show that people go to the archives and it blows up, meaning a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, I can
do
understand.
The show.
Cool.
And first of all, you should get yourself a part-time, you should get a blog radio show. You are terrific. I love you.
Well, I've been offered a show. I mean, I'm working on it. Don't worry about it. If you need
yeah,
somebody, give me a call.
Okay, well, they should. I'm going to play a little Rodney. Tell me about it if you could. And then we're going to wrap it up and I'll and
all
talk
right.
to Nick. And if you still have time, we're going to – Nick has a very – Nick is our political scientist, and the journalist is the guy who comes on and kicks my ass and corrects me every time I talk.
You always need a co-host like that. you know what I mean? Get a midget next time. That's the thing. Use his head as an ashtray while you're at it.
There you go. Here's classic Rodney.
Okay, let's listen to that.
I'm all right now, but last week I was in rough shape, you know? Well, last week I told my wife I need a home improvement loan. She gave me $1,000 to move out. I tell you, my wife, there's always something, you know? Well, the other day I called her up. I said to her, honey, I've been thinking about the last time we had sex. I'm getting excited. She said, who is this? I tell you, my wife, she never went for me. Well, the first time I called her up, she told me, come on over. There's nobody home. I went over. There was nobody home. My wife, she drives me nuts. Oh, she was afraid of the dark. She saw me naked. Now she's afraid of the light. Well, I tell you, that's all right. That's okay. I tell you, actually, I shouldn't tell jokes about my wife. I mean, she's attached to a machine that keeps her alive, the refrigerator. And I tell you, my wife, she can't cook either. My house, we pray after we eat. I bought a pressure cooker. Now I eat off the ceiling. What a lousy cook. I don't think meatloaf should glow in the dark. I mean, she can't cook at all. She made chocolate mousse and antler got stuck in my throat. I'll tell you my trouble. I got the wrong doctor. You know my doctor, Dr. Vinnie Blumart. So my doctor... And I saw him last week. I told him, Doc, every day I wake up, I look in the mirror, I want to throw up. What's wrong with me? He said, I don't know, but your eyesight is perfect. Are you kidding? I know I'm ugly. I asked the bartender to make me a zombie. Told me God beat him to it. Well, I'll tell you, you know when you're ugly, all right? Well, Halloween, my wife sends the kids out dressed like me. I mean, I'll tell you. I'll tell you the whole story, all right? I mean, you know when you're ugly. Well, last Halloween, a kid tried to pull my face off. And my kids, they flip a coin to see who has to kiss me goodnight. And I was an ugly kid, too. I told my old man, never took me to the zoo. He said, if they want you, they'll come and get you. Well, that's the story of my life. No respect. I don't get no respect. I was drowning. I was yelling, help, help. And the lifeguard ran over. So they're like, buddy, keep it down. Keep it down. Yeah, I don't get no respect from anyone. Well, I called up suicide prevention. They tried to talk me into it.
the hey, guys. God rest his soul. I love him to death.
Oh, yeah, he had a shotgun delivery, set up punchline, boom, boom, boom. He said, hurry up, butcher it, butcher the joke. How much is this one going to go over? I've made him many jokes in his stylings. It's a different, his own style. I don't do comedy in his style.
Oh, it's beautiful.
He's
beautiful.
Great. He made you laugh your ass off.
Oh, he sure did. I want to thank you so much, Kat, for coming on.
Thank you.
And you got an open invitation. I'm a fan of yours.
Oh, wonderful. Just put like on my Kathy Michelle fan site. Thank you so much. I've been banned, though, off of Facebook for indecent exposure. I got 15 more days. I said, what are you arguing indecent exposure? You know, I want to take off my clothes. People pay me to keep them on. You know? They said, hey, put some on. You'll catch a cold in here. What the fuck's going on? But Facebook has got pegged me for everything I say, and they throw me off. So I'll be on Facebook in 12 to 15 days more of my punishment. Like on my fan site, Kathy Michelle, fan site, you know, and I'm there.
Well, everybody, we're going to be promoting you like crazy all week. And I
thanks so much. And anything you need, post it, because I can't get on Facebook. But, you know, I'll spread your show around. I love it. You're great.
Oh, thank you.
And you're a very good interviewer.
I'm going to get, we have other social medias we're connected to, Twitter and Blip TV and everything, and we have this AEN network that goes worldwide. I'm going to download this interview. I'm going to put it up. The world's going to know who you are, and I want to thank you so much.
Well thank you very much, and, you know, keep on keeping on. Love the show.
We got to do it. We have no choice, do we, Kat?
No, that's what you do, you know, or you're usually people are radio hosts, they're very smart, they are comedic, they know how to interview, and you got it all, you're talented. About time we have a decent show out there.
Oh, bless your heart. Don't make me come over there and try to seduce you.
That's going to sound bad. All right, I'll go for that. My age, look, I can't take what I can get. You're old enough to pee, you're old enough for me. That's it.
Well, you're beautiful, ladies and gentlemen, Kathy Newman.
Well, thank you so much, and I enjoyed it, and I'll call you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Enjoy
you're
it.
Welcome.
You too. Bye.
I love you,
all
too.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.
God, she's great. I love her. I'm a fan. She is great. All right, guys, we're going to switch gears. The journalist is still here. Nick is still here, and what we're going to do is we're going to talk about something that's close to Nick's heart. And Nick, the reason you came on is because you wanted to talk about the debt.
Well, actually, specifically, I was going to reference an article I actually just ran yesterday in Progressive Press. And again, anyone listening, it's progressivepress.net.
Mm-hmm.
Ran an article actually about another guest you've had on your show, Mark Provost. He's a New Hampshire-based activist. The guy is he's a monster when it comes to jumping up and stomping on the terror about something people should pay attention to. He recently ran an action, which is what the story's about. There's a group, a voter outreach group, as they like to call themselves, called Fix the Debt. And it's basically just made up of a bunch of, corporate interest groups and CEOs who are going around the country holding these seminars, parties, and events trying to really sell the message to people that with this, debt crisis that everyone's talking about, that the best and only way we can address it is if we cut things like Social Security, Medicaid, and programs that people really need. On Monday, they held an event in New Hampshire at St. Anselm College. It's actually one of the schools I've been to. And they were attempting to sell this bullshit message before my friends Mark and Matt Lawrence decided to step up and actually address their points directly by pointing out that Honeywell, and specifically the man speaking was a man named David Cody. He's the CEO of Honeywell. They're one of the largest government contractors out there, multinational, multi-million, if not billion-dollar company.
Right.
And their effective tax rate is approximately 2%. Because
wow.
They take advantage of all the loopholes and overseas things. And so you've got this multimillionaire CEO standing up in front of a bunch of pensioners and retirees trying to tell them that the Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid benefits that people oftentimes rely on are good. Everyone needs to pitch in and sacrifice a little bit to fix this debt that was ultimately created by, when you get right down to it, it was really created by just a bunch of bad decisions and a bunch of corporate influences. So Mark and Matt, as part of this group, Flip the Debt, really kicked off the counter campaign by, bringing the other point of view to the people there. And after they were escorted out by police, which is pretty typical for these sort of things, a number of actual retirees in the audience and a number of people representing the Coalition for Retired Americans genuinely asked him how it is that, that this group and these people could justify saying, we need to keep our tax rates low, we just need to cut your benefits.
Right.
And
right.
So it was a pretty powerful action. It's got a lot of attention through Truth Out and other media outlets, including Progressive Press. Personally, I think my article is one of the better written ones, but that's just self-aggrandizing.
Well, you got the headline. I'm on it right now. The headline, Honeywell CEO taken by surprise by austerity? I never heard of that. Help me out with that one.
Oh, well, austerity is like the big, you know, it's the big line
okay.
right now coming out of the corporate right wing. They're out there really, you know, hammering away saying that we've got a debt and deficit crisis, and the only way to really address it is to just cut program after program. Now, naturally, you know, they say that in a broad scope, but generally what they mean is they mean cut social programs. And they want to do this because the only other way to actually, you know, address any kind of debt or deficit issue is to increase revenue. And that means raising taxes. Now, no one's going to go raising taxes on actual individual middle class or lower class taxpayers. Instead, a lot of people are saying they should be raised on the wealthy, that loopholes that allow corporations like Honeywell to settle all of their, you know, all of their money in these offshore accounts and these tax havens need to be closed so that as corporate citizens, and it's funny because it ties into Citizens United really big too, because now we're all supposed to regard corporations as people, yet
mm-hmm.
these people are somehow, you know, magically tax exempt in so many ways. Because if I tried to establish offshore accounts to hide my money, what little I make when I make it, I'd have the IRS up my ass. But
right.
you don't have that with these, you know, with these super wealthy people and these super wealthy corporations, because they're the ones who largely finance the election campaigns for the elected officials. So, which is why even bringing up the question is, you know, by many, you know, with many people in Congress, primarily Republicans, but you know, blue dogs too. It's just met with hostility, and it's met with these lines, these old, largely debunked economic myths that, you know, corporate tax rates need to be at rock bottom in order to keep business here, that, you know, the ultra wealthy need to be taken care of because they invest their money.
Mm-hmm.
But since, you know, since we've been struggling and scrapping and gnashing our teeth trying to get some sort of genuine economic recovery going, what we're finding is that especially the banks, the financial institutions, and most larger massive corporations are going out of their way to really hide their assets. And that's because if it was exposed how much money the, you know, the banks and these, you know, these major trade groups are actually sitting on, that myth of they need to make as much money as they can so they can reinvest is totally debunked. And that's really what flipped the debt, which is, like I said, the counter campaign run by activists across the country, is really trying to address.
Now, if Flip, there's two questions. I know I was watching 60 Minutes, I guess it was like 3-4 months ago, and they were worried about big corporations like Honeywell, other corporations, taking their business and doing business in other countries like Sweden under a different name, and so they don't have to pay the taxes, and a lot of corporations were leaving the country. Do you find that true? And do you find
lots of corporations already do that. Loads
right.
of them do that. And the thing is that, you know, it's, you know, they sell it as this, you know, one of the problems with modern business, you know, in you know, not just in America, but, you know, multinational corporate business, is that the line we need to stay competitive is often, I believe, it's often very abused. Because, you know, that's used to rationalize everything that they do. And when you really look at the total effects of the things that a lot of these corporations do, I mean, compared to, take any amount of, you know, any decades prior to Reagan, you know, back in America's golden age, in the 50s, for instance, when 35% of all jobs were union jobs, workers had contracts, pensions, and you had people who would stay there, they would have entire careers in one company, like manufacturing and such, or, you know, just general labor even. And they were able to, because of their union contracts, they were able to negotiate pay, you know, that they could sustain themselves on, and retirement benefits. And at the same time, you know, executive compensation was still considerably higher than, you know, your average worker, as it's, you know, always going to be. But the rates and the actual differential between the amount that would go towards labor and overhead versus the amount that was sucked up into direct profit, you know, decades back, was much lower. And that not only allowed for, you know, these, you know, the workers of the company to have sustainable incomes and to retire and to be able to pay down their mortgage, pay down their car, put their kids through college, have a retirement account, and even take vacations from time to time, which you're not finding these days. And a lot of that, you know, we say cost of living. Well, a big part of that cost of living is because maximizing profit, and especially in this age where, you know, the economy is not even really based on the making of things and the selling of things. It's based on the speculation about corporate making and selling. And it's all, you know, it's financial wizardry. It's smoke and mirrors. And because of that, you've got these groups like Fix the Debt, run by CEOs. And if you go to their website, you can even look at their coalition partners, and you'll see that these are all almost exclusively, just free market, think tank, pro-corporate organizations that in very, you know, twisted terms try and say, you know, like, we do voter outreach. It's like, no, what you do is marketing. It's like, oh, you know, we try and educate public officials. It's like, no, that's called lobbying. And, you know, it's a spin game, trying to spin an old idea that as long as the rich and powerful stay rich and powerful and continue getting more rich and powerful, that'll trickle down to everyone else. But people are starting to turn on to the idea that that's not actually true, because we've been trying to, you know, live that myth for the last 30 years or so, and it's just gotten progressively worse for most people.
I think you're right. Can I continue?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think basically 99% of what you're saying is correct, but I think what you're leaving out is that everything you said is true and accurate, and yet it persists and persists and persists. What you're talking about now is no different than what people were talking about in the 80s when Reagan ended the Head Start funding and he closed all the mental hospitals, creating the homeless situation we have today. Ronald Reagan closed all the mental state hospitals and turned those people out into the street, which is why 40% of homeless people are schizophrenic, psychotic, and these types of people. But we all know these things. What my point is, the point that I'd like to make is that at the top of this thing is money. And the Democrats who are supposed to be protecting us are just as rich as the Republicans at the top who are trying to destroy us. And what happens invariably is that the people who are supposed to have our back, I'm not even mad at the Republicans and the racists and the fascists, because they're just doing their job. I think the fault is with the Pelosi's and the Clintons that are supposed to protect us, but at the top, they're millionaires too. So then they say, well, we're millionaires too, and we're millionaires, so let them have their way. Isn't
Journalist?
That the problem?
Okay, there you go. You're back. I think you had a drop out. Go ahead, you're back.
Isn't that the problem, Nick?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, a lot of people give me shit because I refused to actually, like, vote for either major party in the last election. And the way I described it was that, between the two of them, it's like you say, you know, the fascists and the corporatists and all, you know, and all the crazy yahoos are just, you know, they're just doing what they do. That's what they do, and they're just out there doing what they do. And when the thing I find is, it's two corporate parties, and the only difference is that one is proud of the fact, and they're proud enough to the point where they don't try and hide it. Democrats,
right.
You know, they need to maintain a coalition of centrist, left, center, and, you know, liberal progressives. But over, you know, and it's right, since, you know, it's been most noticeable since Reagan, but it's really been going on since Wilson, is there has been a perpetual and very calculated and very effective effort to really drag public discourse further into what we understand as the right wing. Now when I say right wing, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean evangelical Christians and the like, but, you know, they have plenty of power too. But more in the pro-corporate mindset. And that's largely because before Wilson, before Woodrow Wilson, there were a plethora of parties. There were parties up and down. There were socialists, like actual socialists, being elected to be governors of states. And what happened was that as we were, you know, as World War I was, you know, really starting to churn up in Europe, the newly developing institution that we call Wall Street today, the investment in financial banks and speculators and such, realized that wartime production could generate a lot of money. And, you know, we saw it again in World War II. But no, you know, this, you know, public Stewart for American involvement in World War One before we got into it was highly suspect. You know, before then, you know, the idea of a military superpower, America being a military superpower, just really wasn't on the table like it is today. And there were, you know, a number of men like Edwin Bernays, who was Sigmund Freud's nephew, and George Creel, who's credited as basically the godfather of, you know, modern public relations, and then also a guy named Lippmann. I mean, these were, you know, professionals who really sort of devised the modern, you know, the modern political process as you see today. My work, prior to being a union organizer, I was a PAC contractor. I was a political contractor. I took on, you know, these issue campaigns, and, you know, primarily, like, you know, socially progressive ones, like ending gentrification, improving education, that sort of thing. But the entire model that we were working on in that sense was really the legacy of these men, Lippmann, Creel, and Bernays. And this comes out of the Wilson era because they wanted to drum up support for the war, they wanted to crush opposition, and they were very effective in doing that by developing these marketing strategies, which we see today, which apply to people's emotions, knee-jerk reactions, sloganeering. You know, even in our presidential debates, the depth to argument and the level of honesty that we see is it's pathetic. And that's because that's just the dynamic in play now. Now, with the democratization of information that's come about thanks to the Internet, the fact that, you know, anyone can say anything, really, that's really kind of altered the dynamic. And it's funny because the failings of the system that was, you know, that's been set up and been in play for actually just about 100 years now is starting to kind of crack, and it's going through some growing pains. And that's why you have, you know, I mean, like, you have splits in the Republican Party that rival those of the Democrats, because liberals and Democrats, it's like trying to herd cats. Like I say, you know, you get a bunch of conservatives together, they'll bitch about liberals. You get a bunch of liberals together, they're going to argue about everything. And because of that, you've got a lot more fractures, and people are starting to question, you know, the validity of what they're hearing everywhere. Sadly, though, because of that, they also regularly and frequently not only question but disbelieve, actual proven facts and, you know, scientific facts, things like climate change. The only reason there's an argument over that is because industrial interests realize they stand to lose considerable amounts of money, so they go out and sow disinformation. And then you capitalize on that with, like, everything from the Alex Jones InfoWars set to the libertarians that are making insurgencies through the Tea Party and such. And they're just preconditioned almost to disbelieve anything that doesn't jive immediately with what they've locked onto as, you know, absolute truth.
And, you know, you can get the full article at theprogressivepress.net. And we had a surprise for M&A. Is that we have, over the month, we've been looking at other magazines. They come to our show. We are going to make the ProgressivePress.net one of the best magazines by Brian Hammer, AEN, and Actors Breakdown, whatever it's worth. One of the best online magazine this year. They are great. I check them every morning. Nicholas Giroff, article, Honeywell, CEO, taken by surprise by the
austerity.
Yeah, I know. Austerity activist. You'll get the correct spelling when you go there. That's progressivepress.net. Read Nicholas's column. I'm glad you made the front page. It's about damn time. I'm going to play. There's a video here, what Nick is talking about, and let's give a listen.
Oh, and give credit to Mr. Provost, though. You've had him on your show, and that's the second voice you'll hear will be him.
Problem buffering. But, Nick, okay, I understand. And I understand, I guess, these are the members of the Flip the Debt people who are interrupting this seminar or meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I understand, and I do understand, 2% they're not paying their taxes. I understand it. But is it their fault? The government's giving these tax breaks here to keep their business in America so they don't go to another country. What is the harm?
Well, you got to remember how it is that, you know, like, government comes about to make these decisions. You know, you go, yeah, there's a great website. I love it. I definitely recommend you check it out. And it's called maplight.org. And that's connected to the project of Open Secrets. And these are both, you know, these are government transparency groups, they're nonprofits, NGOs, not partisan. And their goal is to really show who is buying the influence and how they're doing it. A lot of people don't realize, you know, we hear reports during elections about how much money a campaign or candidate has raised. And now we're hearing more about how much super PACs are spending.
Sure.
This is all corporate money. And this
yeah.
is what they do, is that they buy both sides of an election. They fund both sides of the campaign. They use a stick and carrot saying, you know, play ball with us and we'll, you know, give
right.
us what we want and we'll make sure you get elected,
mm-hmm.
while also saying, if you don't play ball, we're going to fund your opposition and we're going to fund all these super PACs and all these groups just to make sure you lose. And they even do that before the general elections. They do that in primaries, which is really how they really get their key part, you know, their key party, you know, their key party players there. But Democrats, Republicans, both. A lot of times Republicans will be chomping at the bit to really show how much they're willing to do for these corporations. Oh, you know, I'll fight to protect your tax breaks. I'll fight to protect your tax shelters
yeah.
and your loopholes. I'll do it under
That's
the
right.
auspices of we're a capitalist nation and anything else would make us communist China. And meanwhile, you got the Democrats who got to sit back and think, how can I spin this? Or how can I, what issues can I run on that'll distract people from the kind of ball games I'm going to play with these people? And so, you know, what's the harm in not closing these things down? Well, the harm is that we have, you know, enormous debts and deficits that are not being paid
exactly.
down. We can't
exactly.
pay for our obligations to our own people. And
yeah.
we continue to basically hand out cost-plus-fee award contracts to these companies that oftentimes do subpar things. KBR and Halliburton are perfect examples of that. It's a government grab bag. And the way they do that is they make sure they have everyone on the same page, and they do that using money.
Excellent. That's what I thought, too. How can we pay back our debt when a corporation is only paying 2% of taxes? And the middle American is only paying, what are we paying, at least 10%, 15%?
Between, I mean, usually, like, depending on, you know, what the nature of the business, you know, what the nature of someone's occupation is and such, and their income level,
mm-hmm.
you know, it can be anywhere between, like, 15 to, you know, 30, 35%,
yeah.
also depending on state revenues. And
exactly.
state taxes always need to go up, and the federal government can't pony up for the programs and entitlements they already promised the states. So then you have state fees, and you know, you have states individually having issues because of this.
Now, what do you think of that, Mr. Journalist? And by the way, he is a journalist.
He dropped. I'm waiting for him to come back.
Oh, okay. You blew him away, Nick. You scared the journalist away.
That's usually how it works. Well, you know, I think you just heard Mark Provost, and usually, like, Mark, you heard Mark. Mark can scare most anyone away if he wants, especially as a CEO.
I am so proud of your work at the Progressive Press. Are you having fun?
Oh, I'm actually having a ball, and it's really open. It's been a lot of very interesting opportunities. That first article I wrote about the Icelandic member of parliament, Birgit Jónsdóttir, she is an international celebrity in activist circles. I was able to interview her for an hour during via Skype, and we're going to be running transcripts and analysis of the interview most likely on Sunday. And
wow,
Tuesday,
look at you.
Oh, on Tuesday, I'm real excited. I've actually got an interview scheduled with one of my absolute favorite writers. He writes about these issues and much bigger ones. Like, you talk about Africa a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to know why Africa is in the position it is, you ask John Perkins, because he's the man who negotiates the loan packages. And I'm interviewing him on Tuesday.
I can feel your passion. And I hope we helped in getting you into a position where they interview these guys. And I know this is your passion. So,
yeah, well, you know, I mean, the promotion definitely, I self-promote like a crazy person because... You know, we're a new upstart magazine, and we're a free and independent member of, like, you know, we're a member of the independent press. We're not beholden to any, you know, advertisers or anything. And
yeah.
the more circulation we get and the more readers we get, the you know, the more, you know, the more opportunities there are for us to grow and bring better stories and bring, you know, better coverage about issues that the mainstream media just cares to ignore.
Well, like I said, recently, when I say recently, as of today, we've got a network, and we went in with some people, and basically it is a network, and it's global. So what I'm going to start doing is downloading, this will be the first show. I will download this show. It will be out to a lot more people. Right now, I just want to say we're over 200,000 people who have listened to us, and we're growing, and part of the contribute, I want to thank you for contributing your political knowledge to help raise the show to another level. A lot of people, and I can go with Wayne D, CEO, with opening it up to a lot of musicians, but you're right, it's all about promoting and marketing and coming with Diane and Jeff also being so professional as far as welcoming people in and Kelly booking great like you. I want you to hold on for a minute. There's another story I think... And we're only got about 10 more minutes, but I want to get to this story. Are you familiar with this gentleman? His name is, they call him L, let me see, let me get his name right. Are you familiar with Joaquin Guzman Laura? Well, you should, because this guy, damn it, do I still have it? Well, Valerian, this guy made the Ford Plus. And the reason it's amazing is that he's public enemy number one. They call him El Chapo. He's head of one of the drug cartels in Mexico.
Oh, I mean, and he's made the Ford Plus in terms of, like, his personal wealth?
That's my point.
Well, I think, you know, that speaks really strongly to, I think it speaks more strongly than anything else to, like, the nature of drugs in this country.
Exactly.
It's an industry. It's no matter black, white, gray, whatever it is, it's a big industry, and there's demand, and it's not that, like, you know, you don't really need to sell cocaine or marijuana or any other, you know, any other drugs that people like. You don't really need to sell them outside of transactionally. There's no marketing involved. I mean, there's some internal, but, you know, realistically, you know, you get someone who's, you know, really likes to blow, you don't need to really market it to them.
I understand it. I understand that, but Forbes have the nerve to... See, that's where I have the problem with Forbes. But anyways, this the Chicago Crime Commission named a new public enemy number one on Thursday. His name is Al. They think he's better than Al Capone. I mean, they put him in the same area. He has a dubious distinction to be bigger than Al Capone. He was in Chicago, and he was the most wanted. Not since Capone has any criminal deserve this little more than Guzman. Commissioner President J.R. Davis said in a news release, Guzman is the major supplier of narcotics to Chicago. His agents are working in the Chicago area, importing vast quantities of drugs for sale throughout the Chicago region and collecting and sending money, tens of millions of dollars in drug money to Mexico. Now, if you know what's going on with Chicago right now, anybody from Chicago can tell you, people are getting killed left and right. I mean, every 20 minutes or somebody, it's like there's no police force ever in Chicago right now. It's an epidemic of killing.
Yep.
And this guy's out of Chicago, and I guess if I remember right, with Al Capone and everybody else, that was the height of the bootlegging and the whiskey, and the killings were just running rapid in the street. But how could Forbes name a criminal, a drug dealer, as make the list? That's like...
Well, think about what the list is, though. I mean, you know, this isn't like, you know, it's not like they're not congratulating him. But they're remarking upon the fact that he's, like, you know, one of the wealthiest, business people out there. I mean, Time Magazine, back in the 30s, you know, in the 40s there, you know, at the time, Time Magazine ran Adolf Hitler as, you know, as the year's most influential person, and the fact is that he was. And there was a big hubbub during 9/11, after 9/11, because, you know, the press did what they do after, you know, especially post 9/11, which is they catered, and they said Rudy Giuliani was the most influential person. No, I mean, honestly, Osama bin Laden in 2001 was the most influential person. He had the biggest impact on world events. That's just fact. and reporting fact is, you know, what journalism is supposed to do. And in that same respect, you know, yeah, this guy, you know, he's sitting atop a murderous empire of, you know, black market drug sales. But the fact is, too, is that his business model has worked out to make him one of the wealthiest people in the country. So,
yeah, but if his funds or if his money is not taxed, how do they know how much this guy really does have? I mean, see,
all you need to do, and the truth is that, you know, whatever Forbes is reporting, I really wouldn't be surprised at all if they're like, you know, if they're really lowballing it, because all you need to do is, you know, take the average observable amount of drug traffic, you take the average pricing for it, you find out what the industry itself is worth, and then you know, I was a little off when I said that it's not, you know, that you don't need to market. You know, the marketing in the drug world is, you know, they stamp their product, they sell it, they say it's the best, and then they also go to kill off their competition. So, you know, if you've got, you know, singular cartels and you've got standard brands going out, you can measure how much money on average that's actually generating. And I don't know enough about this individual dealer himself, this kingpin as it was, to say one way or the other what kind of person he is, but I do know that, you know, if he's being reported on like this, then he's probably not trying to play the Kaiser Soze game where no one knows who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that surprising for, you know, people to, like, flaunt their wealth like that, regardless of how they make it. So, you know, I mean, they're probably right.
Not only his wealth, but who he is. It says right here, he's the most powerful drug trafficker in the world. And it says here, Guzman, who is El Capo we're just talking about, has been ranked by Forbes magazine as one of the most powerful people in the world ever since year 2009, ranking number 41 out of 60 people.
Well, would you say, though, I mean, with the amount of wealth and the amount of power that he has, that that's not an accurate report?
What kind of message am I sending out, though?
It's sending out the message that, you know, it's sending out the honest message that, you know, this man in this industry has grown to enormous wealth and power from it. I mean, you know, whether, you know, the moral and ethical aspects to his wealth and his power are a separate discussion than the outright fact that he has this much wealth and power. To leave him out would be like, you know, it would be a lie through omission.
Well, it says here, He's also listed by Forbes as the 10th richest man in Mexico. Right here, Forbes also calls him the biggest drug lord of all time, and the DEA strongly believes he has surpassed the influence and the reach of Pablo Escobar and considers him the godfather of the drug world.
You want to look for deeper questions about this, and, like, you know, just regarding their reporting on it. I think their reporting on it should really be spurring questions about, you know, the nature of the drug industry. Despite all efforts to combat drug trafficking in the ways that we've been going about it, not only have we failed to stem or stabilize drug use and imports, but we failed to, like, you know, we failed to keep it from growing. It's continuously growing. If this man now is richer and more powerful than Pablo Escobar, that's because the nature of his business allows it to be so. Now, despite all of our best efforts, if it's been that impossible to stop traffic, and if it's been that impossible to stop this industry by the means that we're doing it, that should tell us that there's more questions that we should be asking about the way we handle things, as opposed to the ethical, you know, virtues of Forbes magazine reporting on the actual factual wealth and power of this man.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
wow.
I mean, like, will you take, you know, I mean, are you familiar with, like, what Portugal did a couple of years back regarding drugs? They decriminalized all use and possession. And in terms of, like, you know, and, I mean, like, you know, if you're trafficking into the country, if you're a big trafficker, they'll still go after you. But, you know, just in terms of use and such, it's dropped dramatically since they've done this. And the reason, and I think this is a model America should really look at, if for nothing else, then because, you know, we're a very unique people in a lot of ways, especially in that if you tell us not to do something, you can be damn sure we're going to try and do it. And drugs have a taboo and a romance about them. You know, in Europe where, you know, and Europe has a lot of heroin in it. No one's going to tell you different. But they don't celebrate the struggles of addiction the way we do oh, you know, overseas where, like, you know, overseas in places like the Netherlands and Portugal, you know, junkie musicians, if they're amazing musicians, people love their music, but they don't respect the junkie, you know. Kurt Cobain would never be as tragic a figure and as romantic a figure in, you know, places throughout Europe as he is here. And that's largely because of the taboo and the prohibition that we put on these things. We say, it's bad, it's bad, it's bad. Government doesn't want you doing it. Your parents said don't do it. The rebellious spirit that, like, really is ingrained in American character pushes people to admire things and go after things that are forbidden and taboo. And the harder we, and the more taboo we make it, and the
that's
more
true.
Bullshit we pour into it, the worse
true.
It gets.
That's true. Here's a little instance. I don't know how much time I have. Diane, how much time do I have? I'm off the page, please. 4 minutes. I don't know if I can read it that fast. I'll read it, but you got to hear this, Nick. It says here, he was going into a restaurant. So he was going to a restaurant. According to the witnesses, in November 2005, Guzman entered a restaurant with 15 of his bodyguards. A lot of them were carrying AK-47s. Here's what happened. The restaurant was known as Las Palmas. It was a green eatery, blah, blah, blah. So here's what one of the bodyguards said to the people, the patrons in the restaurant. Gentlemen, please, give me a moment of your time. A man is going to come in, the boss. We will ask you to remain in your seats. The doors will close, and nobody is allowed to leave. You will also not be allowed to use your cellulars. Do not worry. If you do everything that I asked you, nothing will happen. Continue eating, and don't ask for your check. The boss will pay. Thank you. And then here's what happened with the diners. The diners reportedly sat there frightened as the El Chapo, that's his name, C-H-A-P-O, which probably means the captain, walked in through the front door of the restaurant. He walked among the tables, greeting each person. Hello, nice to meet you. How are you? I'm Joaquin Guzman. A pleasure at your service, he said to all the diners as he shook their hands. The El Capo then walked to a private saloon inside the restaurant where he ate the house specialties of beef and fish-sized shrimp. After a couple of hours, the meal ended as Guzman departed. His gunman left moments later. The Los Angeles Times reported on this incident in an article published on November 3, 2008. The newspaper, however, noted that whether any of these reported exploits actually happened, because these stories of Guzman has been created as a mythology around his image, where he claims to be everywhere and nowhere at the same time. What do you think of this? Now he's a legend.
You know, that's, I mean, like, you know, listen, you know, anyone of any kind of power, you know, desires some kind of mystique. You know, Capone was famous for the same thing. You know, you take, you know, like New York gangsters like Bumpy Johnson, for instance. He's a great example. Like, you know, Bumpy killed a lot of fucking people. Bumpy was like, you know, Bumpy was largely responsible for, you know, the development of, you know, the heroin trade in the Northeast and throughout the U.S. And, you know, his protege Frank was, you know, he just carried that torch. The thing is, both these guys would go out and, you know, they'd go to their old neighborhoods and they'd give away turkeys and Christmas trees and gifts, and they'd, you know, they'd spread their money around. It's no different than, like, you know, the crack dealer who tries to make good. And it's, you know, nobody wants, you know, every, you know, anyone who's in an industry like that, you know, powerful person in an illegal industry, they need to be feared, but they also want to be loved. And it's, you know, it's the same he's had throughout history. And this is him building his mystique, whether or not he actually went into a restaurant. And I really wouldn't be surprised if that happened. I definitely wouldn't be surprised if he tried to buy everyone's meals.
That's,
you know, you try to allay people's fears and, you know, establish a public profile that has some mystique and romance to it. Everybody loves it. And if you've got the means to do it and you're already well feared and you have men with AKs who can give instructions to people, you're going to play with it. You're going to have, you know, you're going to have fun with it. The guy's you know, he's a criminal kingpin. He's a, you know, he's at the top of a criminal empire. So what's left to do outside of, you know, maintain the fear and love that you want people to have for you? That's what
That's
comes
true.
To power.
That is true. On that note, I want to thank my sponsors. One of the biggest sponsors I want to thank, the Progressive Press. You can read Nicholas' article, progressivepress.net. I recommend it. As you can tell, Nicholas is a very intelligent man. He knows what he's talking about. You're going to get the real deal. It's not going to be any kind of biased news crap. This is the real stories. Go to progressivepress.net. M&A, How Are You? I Miss You, is run by a very intelligent, soon-to-be powerful lady. Support to progressivepress.net. You heard Nicholas, and this is the kind of writing, this is the kind of stories he loves to do, and you'll get the real deal, because the man does his research. He's not listening to according to this source or according to this source and put words in there that makes them look good. This guy does his research, he does investigative reporting, and you just heard the guest that he's going to be interviewing in next week and Friday and things. Nicholas, I love you. Thank you so much. That's Nicholas Gorof, progressivepress.net. And, you know, I'm talking to you studio heads, because I looked at who's subscribing to our show, and a lot of you guys are from MGM and this. Nick is an actor, too. He's not only smart, he's an actor. Nick, how can I get a hold of you?
Actors are quite often smart. Easiest ways to get a hold of me, I mean, there's, obviously I'm accessible through the Progressive Press, and I definitely, if any readers out there too who may check me out, you will find some bias in some pieces, but I'm not ashamed or bashful of it. Feel free to comment and start an argument. We'll argue privately, not on the page. anyone else who wants to get in touch with me, though, you can find me on Facebook. My name is just Nick Goroff, G-O-R-O-F-F. I have a LinkedIn profile. I'm not hard to find. You do, you know, you look me up on Facebook, you look me up on LinkedIn, you'll find me easy enough. And of course, follow me on the progressivepress.net. I can be reached there via comment, and I'll be happy to get back to you through your email. I've got an IMDb page. Just do a search on IMDb for Nicholas Goroff, and that's with a C-H, not a C-K. I'm not actually from Russia. I'm easily accessible. And of course, anyone who wants to can also contact Brian the Hammer, because he's got my email and we're in contact. So,
you're damn right. I'm damn proud of it.
And I welcome all, any and all feedback.
Thank you, sir. Again, I want to thank my guest, Nicholas Goroff. I want to thank Kat D. I want to make sure she has, want to say her name. So you guys may know her as Kathy Michelle or Kathy Newman, Kat D. Check her out. You can check her out on Facebook and YouTube. And I want to thank Jeff and Diane, who's going to open up their mic so they can say goodbye to Nick, because we love Nick.
Bye, Nick. You have a good day.
Cheers, you too.
Thank you,
buddy. Give our love to M&A.
Definitely will.
And ladies and gentlemen, that's our show. Nick, you know you're VIP. When you got a lead story like this, you don't have to. Come on. Just say, hey, I got this story. Brian, that's up there. I go, psh. Hey, I'm right there.
Well, hey, one thing I would like to promote too, actually, and it's also a little self-promotion, but there's for people on Facebook, search and find Four Corners Movie. It's a documentary produced by Talora Michael, who's a very good friend, someone who's very close to me. But it was a year ago in New Orleans. She's been traveling across the country, city after city, hunting, you know, just sniffing people out with opinions and interesting things to say. She's in the process right now of editing and compiling this documentary. It's going to be really compelling, really eye-opening on a lot of issues. So I encourage anyone who's listening to definitely check that out on Facebook or, check the webpage. Check her out. It's definitely worth a look.
And come back next week, too. I want to talk to you about Hegel. You tell me they're not, these Republicans are not playing some kind of mind game. For two votes, give me a break.
Let's go politics, man. It's going to happen every time with everything.
They want something. I don't know what it is, but two votes, come on. Mm-hmm. It's, how obvious is this?
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, we'll talk about that. I'm sure there's going to be a spin on that. I'll be checking the Progressive Press. I'm sure you did stories on that already. You had to, right?
Oh, there's a Hegel story in there somewhere. I mean, I read through most of the stories that go up, but like, most of the time that I'm logged onto the site, I'm usually trying to write a piece myself, so I'm sitting there agonizing over links and details and facts, and making sure I get the quotes right, and making sure it's the right person who said the right thing, and that they weren't, you know, to check what they said. So there's a lot of work that goes on into it, but it's what allows us to like really produce quality stories.
Love it. Thank you, sir. And Diane and Jeff, we're going to leave. And Nicholas, I'm going to take you out. We have little things how we do it. Let's take you out with a bang. What do you think, huh? I mean, you're a big guy. You kick ass. This is for Nicholas. I'm going to take him out with a bang, and we'll see you guys tomorrow.
Bye.
my guy. This is Brian Hammer Jackson. I'll see you tomorrow. Wait, tomorrow's what? Wait a minute, tomorrow's Saturday?
Saturday.
Ugh. We may do a Saturday show. It's our music show, everybody. Stay tuned. You're going to see me. It's one of those drinking shows. We're going to have fun, new artists and music, and we're just going to rock you. See you guys tomorrow night. Bye, Diane. Bye, Jeff. And
bye,
Nick, thank you.